Hi, this is David. I've started a few small businesses over the years, including this podcast, and the situation is always the same. Every day another urgent task pops up and your to-do list is never-ending. Shopify wasn't around when I got started as an entrepreneur, but I wish it had been, because it would have made my life a whole lot easier. How so? Well, with Shopify, you have instant access to hundreds of templates that make building an online store easy. Not just a beautiful storefront, but one that converts visitors into paying customers. Shopify is also packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even improve your product photography. It's like you have a full marketing team behind you, not to mention tools for managing inventory, international shipping, processing returns, and a whole lot more. If you're ready to sell, you're ready for Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational. shopify.com/inspirational. Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from Adventures in Common Sense by Dr. Frank Crane, published in 1916. Leonardo's Mona Lisa was stolen by an Italian thief in 1911. And when she finally got back to her place upon the walls of the Louvre 2 years later, all the world came to see her. On the first day of her homecoming, some 20,000 visitors trooped by to have a look at the most famous of paintings. And there, with those placid hands upon her lap, she sat in her frame, regarding the passers-by with her amused and superior smile, very much as you would look upon the antics of your pet kitten. "Why worry?" she seemed to say. "Here I am, as you see. I came back, of course, since it is written. It was destiny. All of us but follow our program. I am the original predestinarian. I am the cheerful fatalist. Men and women struggle and fume, but always by and by they do what is set down for them to do, in the book of fate. It is to smile. I am the companion of Omar Khayyam, for I am the looker-on. I do not mingle with the energies of other people. I am a bystander. My maker was the many-minded one. He was a philosopher. Philosophy is aloofness. I am the daughter of the aloof." Leonardo smiled at people in his heart, and made me that I might smile at them forever. "I am the eternal feminine. I do not labor. I sit. I judge. I smile. I know. Hence I am amused. I am in the secret of things, and that is always rather funny. It is so different from the appearance of things. In the core of wisdom is laughter. In the secret springs of history there is grim humor. Underneath the intense activities, the fierce rivalries, the burning passions of humanity, back of the debates of senates, the thunder of wars, the display of wealth, and the earnestness of reformers, there is something that makes me smile. I cannot tell you what it is. You would have to be a Leonardo to understand. Wisdom is jocund as it nears perfection. God is glad. This at least I can hint to you. You are fretting over nothing at all. The universe is kind. It means well by us. When you get through with life and pass through revealing death and see what it all means, the first thing you will do will be to have a good laugh. Tragedy is the greatest of humbugs. I have peeped behind the veil. I know that every Jack will have his Jill, every wrong be righted, and the short story called life will have a happy ending. I have seen the end of the world. It is pleasant. That is why all through the revolution and tyranny, the flow and ebb of progress, Louis the Luxurious and Robespierre the Terrible, I have sat so contented and unruffled. I smiled to see how long it took you to discover gravity, steam, electricity, evolution, democracy. The race is so stupid, so awkward, and so amusing. I am nature. Look at me and you see how self-satisfied and smiling nature goes about her business. I am also humankind, playing, procreating, joking, planting trees, building houses, and going away. I am death, which is the most delightful surprise, and not at all the horrible catastrophe you fancy. I am everything and everybody. Some things and some people are morbid and vicious, but in the all, cheer predominates. I am in the secret of God, and the secret of God is a smile. People take themselves so seriously. They think they do things. In reality, they are leaves upon the streams, clouds in the sky, particles in the sunbeam. Men and women are but chess players, and the one who moves is God, who smiles. I am the soul of kittens that play with their tails, of puppies that frisk, of little lambs that frolic, of all things newborn. I am youth forever recurrent. If I could speak, I should utter the greatest words ever spoken, and recall to you that the world's master said, I am the resurrection and the life. It was said that the crowd that viewed Mona Lisa that day of her return were of a light gaiety, with a decided tendency to crack jokes. Even the police guarding her were smiling. The incomparable Leonardo, full of strange and cunning secrets, embodied his whole wisdom in a smile, that it might infect the world. Let us move on now from the Mona Lisa to some more simple and practical advice for a happy life. It is worthwhile to try any recipe for happiness, but here is one that at least is to be recommended for its simplicity and for the fact that it is within the reach of all. It is to rid yourself of your notion of your rights. Think a bit and you will see that the greater part of all the indignities, chagrins, and humiliations you have had to endure arise from the certain ideas you entertain about what is due you. If you can exercise your mind until you come to the conclusion that nothing at all is due you, happiness is pretty sure to come in and take permanent lodgings in your heart. Most of us have a contempt for manipulating our minds to suit the inevitable, and an admiration for those of us who can coerce events to suit their desires. But let us suppose that when you awake in the morning, before you get out of bed, you do a little mental exercise. Ask yourself, why should anyone love me? Why should I be sought, admired, or praised? What right have I to luxuries or wealth? Others suffer. Why should I have an easy path? I have no claims on the universe. So if anything good comes my way today, I shall consider myself blessed. Before you get up, clean out of your mind every feeling of your rights and see what kind of day you will have. Don't try for more than one day at first, for it will tax your forces. Old habits of thought will bring constant suggestions that you are being abused, imposed upon, oppressed, and devoured. Be patient. Put these ideas away. Try just one day to act on the theory that you have no rights at all. Expect no gratitude when you help the poor. Look for no recognition when you accommodate a friend. Give up your seat in a crowded room. Step back and wait for others at the checkout counter. Require no attention from service staff, your children, or your spouse. Be a doormat. It's only for one day. By night, you may be disgusted with the experiment. And yet reflect. Have not all the best things in life come to you over your shoulder? And have not the great miseries of your life been due to not getting things you thought you ought to have? Things you strive for? Remember the simple and lively emotions caused by the unexpected stroke of luck. By the favor of someone from whom you did not look for it. By the love shown you that you did not dream of. By beautiful sights, pleasant odors, delightful foods, as well as other surprises of sympathy, regard, and appreciation that fell to you as bolts from a clear sky. The best of our treasures came to us undeserved. The joys that know no yesterdays are all surplus. We never earn them. Health is nature's largesse. True love is the gift of an overflowing heart. The person who thinks they deserve the love of a good woman or man and the worship of little children ought to be kicked. In its higher plane, life is not commercial. It is not buying for a price. It is not a realm of law except the mystic law of love. Thank God we do not get our just desserts. To get the taste of life, we must approach it as a beggar at the king's court. If we are despised, what more natural? If we are honored, what a marvel! You want to know how you can get the most out of life? How you can keep from having that sense of dissatisfaction when going to bed at night? How you can have instead that feeling of contentment? That the past 24 hours were worthwhile? Well, this hint may help. The secret of permanent pleasure lies in cultivating ever higher forms of pleasure. When we were savages long ago, we ate our meat raw. As we became civilized, we wanted it cooked. As we grew more civilized, we wanted it well cooked. The value of culture is the refinement of wants. In a dumb, silly way, the world perceives this and tries to show superiority in forms of pleasure that are unusual, expensive, and exclusive. It dines at five-star hotels, wears costly jewels, preens itself in fine clothes, and wraps itself in rich furs. This is the twisted, perverted notion of what is a great truth. All luxury and extravagance soon becomes coarse and degrading to the enlightened soul. the upper 10% fall victim to the Great Delusion. That is, that complexity indicates higher life, whereas it is actually simplicity, developing into ever greater fineness and refinement. The six roads that lead to more permanent pleasures are these: religion, philosophy, love, art, craftsmanship, and nature. By religion, I mean a reverent habit of mind, a sense of wonder and mystery, a realization that we live in a world of spiritual meanings. Unless you can attain to this, your life must always be mean and hard. Of course, I refer to no religious institution, but to that religious feeling that has always marked great lives. By philosophy, I mean that you must have some sort of program for your life. So long as events to you are but a disordered mess of happenings, you will be miserable, the football of fate. You must have certain foundation principles, some settled theory of life that will bring order out of chaos. By love, I mean that you must have the power to idealize your own crude instincts. Lust sates, sickens, wearies. Love, which is the idealization of passion, is eternal, ever fresh. By art, I mean the expression of the higher powers of the mind in creating beautiful things. When you learn to love a Greek temple more than a millionaire's McMansion, a painting by Monet more than a computer graphic, the wit of Mark Twain more than the laughs of a TV sitcom, a Beethoven quartet more than pop music, and in general all things that have the quietness of power, the self-restraint of genius, and the subtlety of intellectual vision, then you have come considerably toward the point where your pleasures are more permanent. By craftsmanship, I mean that skill that transforms work from drudgery to enchantment. And by the love of nature, I mean that patient study of, and eventual delight in, the marvelous design, perfection and handicraft exhibited by everything that grows, by everything the Creator has made. The secret of permanent pleasure can be found by anyone who will make it their life business to seek their pleasures in these six sources, until at last you may come to a rational delight in your own thoughts, such as English poet laureate Robert Bridges expressed when he said, "My thoughts swim like a ship that with the weight of her rich cargo sleeps becalmed on the infinite seas, knowing that nothing can stir her golden freight."